You're listening to The Hudson River, a weekly half-hour program about the nature, culture, and beauty of one of America's great waterways. The Hudson River is produced at Vassar College and brought to you in cooperation with this radio station. I'm your host, Mark Breslov. Coming up, Jonathan Kruk tells us tales of how some places along the Hudson got their names. We speak with historical folk singer Rich Balla about a favorite song of ours set on Newburgh Bay. And we hear the story of one woman's moonlit encounter with a swarm of eels in a seemingly unlikely place, off West 79th Street in New York City, to be exact. All this and more next on the Hudson River.
50 sail on Newburgh Bay, waiting for the wind and tide. 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, with the anchors over the side. 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, waiting for the wind and tide. 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, with the anchors over the side. The skippers all sit on the rail to yarn, the same as farmers by the old red barn. And the boys in skiffs have gone ashore to ruckus outside the fish kill store.
Pete Seeger and Ed Renahan recorded this original version of the song 50 Sail on Newburgh Bay in 1976. Historical folk singer Rich Balla then covered it in his 1989 recording, Hudson Valley Traditions. On this week's Hudson River Culture segment, Balla tells us about his fondness for the song and a little more about its history.
At the time, and even still today, it's one of the only songs that I know of that's really sort of about the sloops on the river. You know, I mean, there's a lot of songs about the clear water on the river, but this is sort of paints a verbal picture of sloops on the river back in the early 1800s. The music was written by Pete Seeger. The words were written by William Geckel. He was a writer, and I think he wrote a lot for like Sports Illustrated. But he wrote these poems, 50 Sail on Newburgh Bay being one of them. And then in, I think it was like in 75 or 76, he approached Pete with them and said, hey, here, I've got these poems. Would you put them to music? And Pete set them to music. And then I guess he liked them so much that he included a number of them on that 50 Sail on Newburgh Bay recording on Folkways.
Sail on Newburgh Bay, waiting for the wind and tide. 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, with their anchors over the side. Well, the skippers all sit on the rails to yarn, same as the farmers by the old red barn. The boys in skiffs have gone ashore to ruckus outside the village store. 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, waiting for the wind and tide. 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, with their anchors over the side. Well, the wind comes up with a mighty roar, white caps roll from shore to shore. So it's anchors up, sail away down the Warrigut from Newburgh Bay. 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, waiting for the wind and tide. 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, with their anchors over the side. Well, the sails are set and the sloops run free, beating through the gate to the Tappan Zee. There's Breakneck Ridge on the leeward side, Storm King Mountain stirring up the tide. 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, waiting for the wind and tide. 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, with their anchors over the side. Well, it's 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, down the river at the break of day. Well, some load weed and some load hay, all the way to New York Bay. 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, waiting for the wind and tide. 50 sail on Newburgh Bay, with their anchors over the side.
On this week's Hudson River feature, we speak with storyteller Jonathan Kruk about some of the tales behind the place names of the Hudson River. Jonathan, why is it important to preserve stories of the Hudson River?
Well, the Hudson is America's river. It's rich with history and legends, too. And by telling these stories, we maintain the river's vitality. We kind of engrave the river into our hearts by sharing the stories. The tales are what keep it vital.
Stories sometimes give clues to the origins of names of very familiar places. How about Poughkeepsie?
Ah, Poughkeepsie, there's a tale behind there, and I shall tell. Now a Mohawk warrior stood and faced a Wappinger chieftain. The Wappinger chieftain was tied up, and there were bundles of sticks smoldering at his feet. The Mohawk explained, "I shall put out these fires if you will agree to fire up your heart and become a real warrior, a Mohawk. What say you? Shall I put out these fires and you join us?" Well, the Wappinger chieftain simply shook his head and would not give his enemy any satisfaction regarding the pain that indeed he was feeling. Now, looking on, also captive, was a Wappinger princess, and she worried greatly for this young chieftain and thought that his bravery would soon lead to his death. Well, the fire began to rise, and the Mohawk's temper began to rise. "Why will you not join us? Why do you not become a true warrior and fight and live like a Mohawk?" And then the Great Spirit interceded. There were whoops and war cries and chants, and the Mohawk's ears pricked. In the distance, they were coming, their dreaded enemy, the Hurons, for a full attack upon this Mohawk encampment. Well, the Mohawks had to leave the Wappinger chieftain there and the young woman alone and attend to this battle that now was at hand. And in the fray and confusion of the fight, the young woman managed to get her hands free and jump up, run over, and untie the Wappinger chieftain. Then, escaping, they made their way down to Makikanituk, found a canoe, slipped in, and began to frantically paddle their way to freedom. Well, the Mohawks managed to stave off the Hurons, and then they turned their attention to retrieving their prisoners. If word got out that the Mohawks had let prisoners escape, they wouldn't be as feared as they now were. Well, the Wappingers went down in their canoe, and they paddled for a couple of hours, and then scanning the river banks, they found a place where they could escape. The young woman said, "I think if we climb up those rocks and take the canoe with us, there'll be no sign of us. The water will quickly evaporate, and we can hide up above." Well, the young chieftain agreed. They brought the canoe to shore, lifted it, and clambering, managed to get up this rather steep rock to hide. And better still, in their hiding place, they found where there bubbled from the ground fresh water, a spring. And the sun dried up the drops of water so that when the Mohawk party came pursuing the Wappingers, they looked here and looked there and didn't notice the watchful eyes of the young woman and the young warrior seeing the Mohawks passing by. They drank the water and waited, for they knew the Mohawks would come back. And when they did, they were crying out, cursing, yelling, "We shall get you, and when we do, you will suffer a painful death. We will get you. You Wappingers cannot escape from us. We are Mohawks." And on they paddled, screaming out, more out of frustration than with a threat. Well, the young man and the young woman were elated, and they went off to their encampments to tell all what had happened. They sat in circles and explained how they managed to escape the dreaded Mohawk. Well, many listened to the story. Where was the spot where they had found sanctuary, this safe harbor? So the Wappinger chieftain and the young woman brought folks back to that place and said, here is where we hid. Look, here is the Mohawk's canoe. And there at that place, all began to drink the water. And they found it to be a safe place to drink water, so they built over it a little shelter. And the place came to be known as Apokepse, or safe harbor. But some say that it really meant a safe place for drinking water. The story tells us in both ways. But indeed, that place is right near what's now called Call Rock, just a little bit north of the bridge between Poughkeepsie and Highland, and it's a little park now where people can visit. But the stream, I believe, is long since gone. Poughkeepsie.